Retronauts is part of the HyperX Podcast Network. Find us and more great shows at podcast.hyperx.com. This week on Retronauts, Crystal awakens something in all of us. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I'm your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and we're covering Star Fox once again on this podcast because we are in the month of Foxtober, the very last day of Foxtober, if you're on Patreon, by the way, and you should be. But yes, this is the second part of our Star Fox retrospective. Last time we covered the first three games of the series, and this time we're covering a much more rocky and experimental period for the Star Fox series, the 2000s and beyond. Before I continue, who is here with you today in the same room? Who's normally here with me today?
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and in one of the secret endings, I'm married to Slippy.
Ooh, I want to see the illustrations of this. Who is our other Bay Area correspondent?
Hey, it's me, Farrah Phoenix Stan, Cat Bailey.
And who do we have in Japan? The same crew as we had the first time. Who else is here today?
Shumaluma, Diamond Fight, Mikaleka Hai, Mikahine Ho.
That's what they say. That's the language in Star Fox Adventures. It's a real language, folks. And yes, today we'll be talking about the rest of the Star Fox games. And if you're like, hey, buddy, start part two. Where's part one? Well, part one is behind the paywall, the evil paywall at patreon.com/retronauts. Sign up for that. You can access all of the other exclusive episodes we've done, almost 70 to date. You can also access all of the articles in associated podcasts that Diamond here has written. There's a lot of those, dozens and dozens of those. So if you want to hear the rest of part one, it is at patreon.com/retronauts.
Bob, such an amount of content, surely that costs hundreds of dollars.
Why, no. For the low, low cost of $5, you can have the hundreds of hours of us talking about video games.
My goodness.
I dare you to find a better deal. Yes.
What a savings.
Exactly. Have we sold you on this yet? But yeah, before we continue, I do want to ask everybody, just very briefly, we talked about our experience with the first chunk of the Star Fox games. Where were you in the 2000s and perhaps in 2016 when the rest of these games released? Let's start with Kat, Star Fox super fan Kat. I'm sure you'll have nice things to say about some of these games.
Oh, yeah. No, I actually... It's funny, I loaded up Star Fox Assault on my Steam Deck just the other day, and I was playing it, and I was like, wow, this first level's basically just Area 6 again, and yet I'm kind of digging it. I'm having a good time. And I've found something to enjoy about the majority of these games. I think the only outright bad one might be Star Fox Zero, and even that one I ultimately managed to enjoy. So... yes, it's kind of a sad decline for the Star Fox series over the years. I've played all of them. I reviewed Star Fox Zero and various others, but well, at least they exist.
Yes, that's the best thing we can say about these games, some of them. Diamond, where were you in various periods of the aughts and 2016 with the Star Fox series?
Oh boy, I was kind of staring from afar with my mouth agape, not really excited about buying any of these games, so I fear much like Pippi, I'm going to slip into the background gradually and just become less and less involved in the team, because, I've played very few of these games, I've owned none of them, so, but I have opinions, but yeah, it's very, I'm afraid this is a very little first-hand, like literally hands-on controller time for me, but... Let's go. I'm hopping.
You can be like Peppy and occasionally chime in with advice like stay alert or whatever. If one of us is falling asleep, you could just chime in with that.
Right.
Henry, what about you? What about you and Star Fox in the 21st century?
Man, you know, it's all I have so many ups and downs through my like personal life, like because adventures I experienced as like via the IGN forums and talking about it up to its release. I worked at a Blockbuster Video when the next GameCube game came out, up until, you know, one of the only time I directly asked Shigeru Miyamoto a question as a games journalist was about one of these games.
Oh.
So, yes, I have.
I want to hear about this.
I have so many. That's a preview for later, guys. But yeah, I have so many personal memories connected to this, despite not having the best time with most of them and not beating any of them, unfortunately. But I was very engaged with all of these as a hardcore Nintendo fan who only wanted the best for Star Fox.
Yeah, me too. I played all of them, although I only played the Wii U one within the past weekend. By the way, yes, you can buy it on Amazon new for less than retail still as of this recording. So go out and get it if you want to. I kind of enjoyed it a little bit. But yeah, I Star Fox fan of the 90s, of course. I get Adventures, and I'm a fan of the Rare games, but it let me down. And I think games from that era that let me down, I took a lot more personally because I was making $5 an hour. So it took me 10 hours of work to play a new game. And I just think about that now, and I'm happy games cost a lot less.
Yes, yeah. Or it costs the same as then in inflation, and hasn't adjusted for inflation too much.
Yeah, and there's lots of Steam sales. But yeah. I played
for all those $70 games they're trying to sell us now.
Just wait until Christmas. Yeah. But yeah, I didn't like Adventures that much. I really bounced off of Star Fox Command when it came out. I played it for like 20 minutes. It was back in the envelope, back to Gamefly. Played Assault, didn't care for it that much. And yeah, I just had a bad taste in my mouth for all these games. But upon revisiting them as a much more calm 40-year-old man, I was in the tumultuous time period of my 20s. I can find a lot more to like in these games. And yeah, the Wii U one is very weird. We'll talk about it. But I find it very charming, and it's like they use every part of the Wii U. It's like they actually use the entire system, and I really like that. So going into this, I was a bit afraid, like, how many of these games are just going to turn me off and just make me regret even signing up for this? But no, I found something to like in all of these, and I didn't think I'd be saying that on this podcast. So we're going to move on in chronological order to the next game in the series. Star Fox Adventures was released in the fall of 2002 in both Japan and the USA. And I loaded this up in my emulator because it costs a lot of money to buy the disc. And I tweeted about it like, here I go, it's come to this. And I thought people would just be like, yeah, fuck this game, it sucks. But all of the tweets I got were just like, oh, I remember this game. Oh, I'm going to replay it again. People really like this game. There's a new wave of nostalgia for it, and I can respect that. And like I said in the intro, I do like Rare games from this period. Like, I like Banjo-Kazooie. I like Banjo-Tooie. I can mess with Donkey Kong 64. But even as an enjoyer of those games at the time, I didn't really like this. And it was part of a very weird and experimental era for Nintendo in which every game they released pissed everybody off. Because, like, Star Fox, not flying an R-Wing anymore. Well, it kind of is, but it's more like Zelda. Mario has got a hose. Zelda is a cartoon girl. Mm-hmm. And Samus, well, she's a first-person shooter now. And everything they were doing is making the hardcore gamers very, very mad. And this was another example of it. And maybe that's why I didn't like it. Maybe because 2002 was an awful time to be alive. That can change a lot of opinions. But yeah, those are my initial thoughts about this game. But upon revisiting it, I can respect it a bit more.
You know, I remember I was really paying close attention to it up to release. I remember first hearing about it as the game it was on another system. And I was really excited for it. And by the time it came out, I think I did let all the jokes about it being a collectathon and Rare's worst things prevent me from playing it. Yeah.
Well, you do collect a million, like, Gooble Globs and Sneeble Snobs and all of the other very British things in this game. Diamond or Cat, any, like, 2002-era experiences with this? I mean, I reserved this game. I was a day-one Star Fox Adventures buyer.
I just rented it, man.
I think it makes a terrible first impression. I really feel like, you know, even if you were not online at the time, even if you weren't, you know, exposed to anyone else's opinions, if you put that in your system and you start playing it, I feel like it gets off to a really rough start. with all the, oh my God, I mean, the gibberish, the nonstop gibberish, and the characters you don't actually know yet, and the game, it's like the people are talking, but they're not speaking English, they're speaking a made-up language, but the game itself, like, text-wise, there's so much text for every, you know, everything you pick up, it's like, oh, you know, you picked up a nut, this nut heals your health, and like, two more sentences after this, and I just feel, you know, it maybe gets better, but wow, like, the first, my first glance at it, I was like, this is infuriating. I don't want to go anymore.
Yeah, it really kind of highlighted the secret decline of Rare into the GameCube era, because everybody thought that Nintendo was doomed. Rare was going to leave, and then that was going to be it. But actually, you know, they repurposed Dinosaur Planet or whatever and turned it into Star Fox Adventures. My own memories of this game was that it was actually gorgeous. It was one of the most technically amazing GameCube games of its era, and nobody could ever shut up about the realistic fur. Oh my God. But as for me, I was kind of resentful of it because I was like, why isn't he in an Arwing? And they had a few Arwing sequences just as a make good for the fans. But Fox isn't in the Arwing enough, and I just wanted the shooter. That's what I wanted. Secretly, maybe it was the direction that Star Fox needed to go all along, which is to turn it into an RPG of sorts in which you are exploring on the ground, but also you're flying around in the Arwing and you're going from planet to planet. But I don't think Star Fox ever kind of quite got there. So for me, Star Fox Adventures is the look ahead, I suppose, to a world that Star Fox never quite reached.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it, Kat. You mentioned Dinosaur Planet. I think we all talked a little bit about it, but it was a bit unfair to Star Fox that the IP was just sort of grafted onto this existing game concept, because like a lot of late N64 games, it moved to the GameCube. There are other ones like Eternal Darkness and Resident Evil Zero. Nintendo just like yanked the cord on the N64 after 2001. There's just like one 2002 release, and it's a very weird port of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3.
Right.
But by the time the GameCube launched, there were no new N64 games. So it was just like, yeah, we're cutting bait, we're moving on, and other projects can jump ship to this one.
I was really excited for those first previews of Dinosaur Planet. I was reading, you know, for literal like years before the release of Star Fox Adventure. Like I was looking forward to this game because, you know, I wanted to see Rare so many times. They had, you know, oh, you did Mario Kart. Well, we'll do Diddy Kong Racing. Oh, you guys did, you know, Mario 64. We'll do Banjo. So I wanted to see what their approach to Ocarina of Time would be. And then it didn't end up being that. I mean, it was, but it was also wasn't. But I guess I can see from Miyamoto and Nintendo's standpoint that they're like, you know, Rare's biggest successes for us, some of them were handing them Donkey Kong, and then they made a game that with Donkey Kong. So let's hand them another furry character and see what they can do with that guy.
Yeah, they really trusted Rare. And at this point, if you weren't around, or maybe if you forgot, they were making the other big games on the N64 that Nintendo didn't have time to make. I mean, there's a huge gulf between like Mario 64 and Zelda 64, and Rare is filling those gaps with things like Diddy Kong and Banjo-Kazooie and things like that. And
I mean, the N64 would have been fucked without Rare there. Like, I mean, it would have had five great games on it, the best games ever, but nothing in between those five games.
And the story of this game is Rare saves Nintendo during the fall of 97 because there's GoldenEye, which we mentioned on the last episode, and there's also Diddy Kong Racing, which I think might be a better game than Mario Kart, even though the characters are worse. But without those two titles, they would just have had a miserable failure of a Christmas of that year. Because Ocarina of Time just got delayed and delayed and delayed. It was not going to make it out for 97, so they needed something to fill the gaps. So Diddy Kong Racing, huge success. That team splits in two. One half of that team goes off to make Jet Force Gemini. The other half goes out to make Dinosaur Planet. And the original version of Dinosaur Planet was going to star Timber the Tiger, which was one of the characters of Diddy Kong Racing that was formerly the star of what Diddy Kong Racing used to be before Diddy Kong was imposed on that game. And Timber the Tiger was like their own Diddy Kong in that he wore a hat with the logo of the studio on it. So Diddy Kong has a Nintendo hat. Timber the Tiger has a Rare hat on. And that's what happened there. The game went through many forms, but luckily in early development, Ocarina of Time released during the development of Dinosaur Planet, so it gave them major inspiration. And eventually, Timber the Tiger was replaced by Saber, named after Saberwolf from an old Rare game, and he was given a female companion named Crystal for his open world adventure. So that's kind of the basics of how Dinosaur Planet was initially thought up before it was a Star Fox game.
And I love dinosaurs meeting sci-fi. Like, that's always a fun combo. I played with Dino Riders toys as a child, so it's always, you get, give me some dinosaurs and some missile launchers. Yeah, that's a good time.
But it's also imposing like a weird Native American like theme to the game, where it's like, here's the sexy native babe that, frankly, too sexy for Star Fox.
Crystal is kind of an Navi, actually, I'd say, from the world of Avatar.
I think so. And then Rare would make that cameo game with another like sexy indigenous character.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
That's very like exoticized.
Is there also a fighter in Killer Instinct that's a bit like that?
Perhaps.
Am I thinking, or I guess, no, Jade's more orientalist, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
Saberwolf,
like,
in Killer Instinct. There's this character called Saberwolf.
Yes.
That's right. He does come back for Killer
British.
Instinct.
Very British of them.
Yes. Oh, yes. A lot of things in this game, frankly, too British. Star Fox 1, just British enough, but they're getting too British here. We'll talk more about that soon. So, Dinosaur, so this is not stated explicitly, but I feel like in the same way that Banjo-Kazooie was trying to outdo Mario, like friendly competition, I feel like this game was trying to outdo Ocarina of Time, because their initial concept was, okay, it's like Ocarina of Time, but there are two characters and the world is seamless. There are no loading times. Unlike in Ocarina of Time, you go into a cave entrance, you've got to load the cave or the dungeon or the house. They were still able to make this work on the GameCube, but that was their initial strategy for the N64. Like, it's a seamless open world, when that idea was still, like, enchanting to all of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they just, they tried showing that off, or they did show it off on Donkey Kong 64. Not that great game, in my opinion, but they had that memory expansion pack, and they were showing off all the new stuff you could do with it.
So, while showing this off at E3, probably like 99 or 2000, Nintendo saw it. They probably knew it was in development. They're like, you've got a Fox character. We have a Fox character. We should talk. And so it was at that point they were given the Star Fox license and trusted with it. And at that point, like I said before, it was moved over to the GameCube. But a good chunk of this game was found, and it's currently kind of playable. A Swedish game collector had a copy of a very late build of Dinosaur Planet for the N64, and hackers have kind of repaired it in some ways to make it playable. A lot of the crystal stuff is unplayable or has like broken flags in it, but you can actually see and play the original version of Dinosaur Planet via this release by this game collector, which is pretty cool.
And I think Nintendo made the right call pushing games like it to the GameCube. Like, the GameCube needed software, like, up front, and it was gonna, you know, they'd be waiting even longer to get out stuff. Like, they didn't even have a Mario ready for launch day, like they did with Mario 64. Like, they needed everything they could get. And, like, I shudder to think how horrible Eternal Darkness would have been on an N64 by comparison, instead of a good game. The only, like, good game accidentally that Silicon Knights made, I'd say.
Hey, they made that Legacy of Kain.
No,
game?
Those were good. I'm being
the one.
Extra mean
they
to
only
those.
Made just the one.
Okay, yeah.
The first one.
That's all they could fucking ship, man.
Star Fox Adventures, I would even go so far as to say Nintendo made the right call, maybe attaching a Nintendo IP to it rather than the somewhat generic sounding Dinosaur Planet. Like, I think people noticed this game because the name Star Fox was attached to it. No joke. I just think that ultimately maybe it was a little bit of a poor fit. Maybe a different IP. Just a thought.
Remember back when they told us to get a second job so that we could afford a PlayStation 3? Those were the days. Now everyone needs a second job just to afford rent, let alone groceries. Then again, with schedules like this, who has time to cook a proper meal? We're all busy, which is why HelloFresh meal kits are so helpful. They have plans that work with any schedule, even a rapidly changing one. You can adjust your preferences and delivery schedule in just a few clicks. And now that the holidays have entered the mix and the days are getting shorter, HelloFresh is even more valuable for helping to reclaim your precious free time by making cooking simple and quick. Each recipe and its pre-portioned ingredients come right to your door so that you can skip the grocery store and a lot of the prep. My wife and I both love to cook, but we also have more work obligations than we know what to do with. HelloFresh lets us share cooking duties without it feeling like a massive burden. And then we still have time to decompress together by watching a movie at the end of the day. Go to HelloFresh.com/Retro65 and use code Retro65 for 65% off plus free shipping on America's number one meal kit. That's 65% off at HelloFresh.com/Retro65 and use code Retro65 for 65% off.
Yeah, new IP perhaps. It was the early 2000s. We could still make new IP back then.
You know, I wonder if somewhere in Nintendo, I bet that I'm just thinking that if they realize, like, if they're thinking that they might sell Rare in the near future, do they want to give Rare a personal IP that they can take with them called Dinosaur Planet, or do they want to put a Nintendo franchise in it that they can't fully own once they sell it off? I wonder if that was part of the decision-making in that.
That's an intriguing theory, Henry, because the timing is so close. Literally the day after this game launches, Microsoft announces the Rare purchase. So it's such a 1-2 punch. So that's maybe not that far-fetched.
Yeah, that was hanging over the release of this game. The day after it releases, it's announced that Rare is leaving Nintendo, Microsoft is buying them, and they have a really rough time at Microsoft. We can consider this game not very great. It took a while for them to make an actual good game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts might be the next actual good game that they made for any Microsoft platform. Some people like Cameo. Nobody likes Perfect Dark Zero.
No.
And then they made a ton of Kinect stuff.
Don't forget Grabbed by the Ghoulies.
Right. Yeah. And that's a testicles joke, everybody. Yeah. But, check your Ghoulies.
Yeah. No, It made things worse for both sides. Both were lessened by doing it. No one was improved. Microsoft didn't know what to do. And I'll tell you what, on the IGN forums, as I mentioned earlier, where I was waiting for this game in my console war-ish era of going like, Microsoft bought them? No! Like, this is going to ruin Nintendo.
Nintendo's
it's
dead.
Awful.
How long before Nintendo goes
I think we
third
all
party?
Thought that.
When will
Apple buy Nintendo? I was sick of that rumor.
Still waiting on that one.
I mean, to be fair to this game, I don't like it that much. I tried to play a little of it, and it's hard to go back to. And my own philosophy about this game is, like, do you want to play any 3D Zelda-like from 2002? This is the best possible version of that experience that's not a Zelda game, and even, like, going back to Ocarina of Time can be pretty hard to do. So they did the best they could with what games could do at this time, but has aged very poorly in a way that 2D games have not aged poorly. And there's, like, a lot of talking, there's a lot of cutscenes, there's a lot of unnecessarily showing you items that you're collecting and things like that. Like, I feel like Beyond Good and Evil is maybe the one Zelda-like from this era that is very playable, and even then it's, like, 5 hours long. It's very digestible.
I mean, even by 2009... when a 7 out of 10 game like Darksiders, like, I still played that all the way then because I was like, wow, this is a good Zelda clone. You never get any of these. Like, I beat that game. But, so in that regard, at least Star Fox Adventures is, like, not terrible at being a Zelda game.
Yeah, I think it's, like, the best possible case of this happening at that time. But it's hard to go back to. And some things I noticed about, you know, this game by watching videos of it and playing a bit of it is that Rare is still keeping their kind of quaint in-house development with the Star Fox brand. So normally all of their characters are voiced by people at Rare, which is why, like, Conker is just some guy who made the game who's just got a funny voice. They're doing that with the Star Fox characters, but these are all very British people. So it's so distracting. You can hear a very British person just, like, cramming that accent down, like, trying to become American playing Star Fox. Peppy is played by the guy who plays Conker, and it's very obvious.
I didn't know that.
Hey,
that's
Fox,
great.
Look out. He's going to get you. Yeah, that's basically how he sounds. But it doesn't really, that bothers my ear, hearing an accent being crammed down someone's throat. But I was like, you had Star Fox actors. The last game was 4 years ago. You couldn't have gotten them back, but they were still doing things their own way, and that's how Rare operated. But to me, I just felt like it wasn't working anymore. That kind of technique wasn't working anymore.
Part of that charm was great in Conker, hearing characters like Buddy, Blippi, that you needed subtitles. You had to have subtitles to play that game. And the Britishness through the compression of an N64, just unlistenable, honestly, without subtitles. But I love those blokes talking. It actually is most of the fun of Conker now is hearing those voices. Like, not certainly not playing it.
All the blokes and the birds.
Oh, and them birds.
Is it just, does it inspire nostalgia just because it's so attached to GameCube nostalgia? Is that what it is? Like, so many kids played it growing up and they're like, oh man. Because actually I had a friend over the weekend. She's like, I think she just turned 30. She has very fond memories of Star Fox Adventures on the GameCube. She was a young GameCube kid and stuff like that. So maybe it was just a case of, you know, misplaced nostalgia, whatever. But I'm just wondering if there is actually something there that we're not really perceiving.
It is weird. It happens to every generation where I notice that games I really liked, Gen Xers, no offense, Diamond, they'll be like, oh, that game sucks. Like, I really liked Mario RPG, but people that were born maybe 5 years before me were like, oh, that game looks awful. It's terrible. It's not Final Fantasy. And I was like, I thought everybody liked this game. And I see the same thing with like Banjo-Kazooie and some of the other 3D platformers where, if you're born, say, in like 1985 or later, you love those games. But if you're born before that, you're like, oh, those games are awful. All you do is collect things. It's not Mario. So I feel like there's always a generational divide, and it's so slight between a lot of games.
Well, I think that...
I'm sorry. Just using Kat's example, if her friend is about 30 right now, then she might have been too young to play Mario 64 or Ocarina of Time. So this would have been the right game at the right time for her.
She was too young for Mario 64.
Right. So if, you know, and just given the general dearth of GameCube games, period, you know, it's like if you had a GameCube around the house, oh, here's the new game for it, and here's some likable ? Characters, and you get in a fun adventure. I could, you know, if this game is just put in front of you and you don't have the option of getting another game or, you know, doing something else, I could totally see getting into this and say, oh, this is great for me. But, you know, as an adult looking at this now, or even an adult being an adult at the time looking at it, I was like, I don't want to play this. I don't like this. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's terrible. It just means that I don't want to put my hands on it. But it's not like everything we're saying about it doesn't make it awful. It just makes little irritations that can add up to the point where it's like, I'm walking away from this. I don't want to deal with this.
You know, I think the not just the look of it, like graphically, it was. I do remember seeing it in 2002, thinking, like, "Wow, that looks really good."
Rain looks really good. Yeah,
yeah. You can save this as a reference, like people who say the GameCube has the worst graphics, show them this, like kind of thing. Clearly, all of my vision at the time was clouded through console war bullshit. But I owned an Xbox anyway. But so I also think kids at the time probably really liked it. Just it is kind of a fanciful world, like all these colorful characters, and perhaps if you're, you know, entering puberty, some of these characters speak to you differently than it did for us past our high school age.
Yes, yeah. Crystal launched about 1,000 DeviantArt accounts or more.
Oh,
that's an underestimation. 10,000, 100,000. I have no problem with sexy characters. I've grown to like them more as I get older, but I feel like she's too much for this world, which is why they really tone her down. Because I was like showing my wife images of Crystal just to remind her, like, this is what Crystal looked like. And she was like, is she wearing underwear underneath her like loincloth? And we investigated and she's got like white panties on, but it's not really panties. It's like, it looks like a fur coloring that looks like panties.
Oh my.
Someone had to texture that. Someone that was having a lot of fun. So they really, they clean up Crystal with future games. She is at her sexiest in this game. And it's almost too much up front.
I don't know how visible it would have been on television at the time, but if you look at higher quality images of that game right now, as far as I can tell, Crystal has both tribal tattoos or something like a tribal tattoo around her arms, and she's got like a lower back tattoo. Like it's incredibly, you know, eroticized. Like there's no way they didn't do this on purpose. You know what I mean? Like it's pretty out there for 2002. Certainly for a Nintendo game.
They could not dress a human character like that in a Nintendo game until like Bayonetta 2 when she's got her sexy Star Fox costume.
Right. She's dressed like, you know, Leia in Jabba's palace. She has a navel. She's got cleavage. Like they really, you know, they spared no expense.
There is flavors of prisoner Leia in here. Yes. Yeah.
Crystal was the character that everybody loved to take shots at during the Let's Hate on Furries era of the internet. Yeah, it's prime material for that.
Yeah, and like we said earlier, we're okay with furries on Retronauts. I'm becoming one over time. I think I'm now like 14%.
Where all the nerds come out and be like, actually, I was really into Anthrofiction all along, you know, and I really stand Crystal. That's why I like Star Fox. God damn it.
I've said it on other podcasts before, but like, I follow several gay male artists online and that post innocent things, but over time I'm like, wait, are you all furries? Am I the only one who's not a furry here? Like,
come on, Henry, get on the bandwagon.
they're pushing me towards it.
When we're all on meta, we could be whatever animal we want to be, and true. It's going to be hot
it's
as hell.
It's 2022. Being furry is cool.
Yeah. Let's embrace it, everybody. Yeah, that's Star Fox Adventures. It didn't review very well. I'm sure it sold extremely well because GameCube players, what else are you going to play? It was a big fall game before Metroid Prime. People were into Zelda. It had been a couple years since Majora's Mask, and you know there's going to be a bit of a wait in America for a Wind Waker. So naturally, people are like, yeah, I want to do another Zelda. Maybe the Star Fox thing doesn't work, but here's a big game I need to get behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just such a heartbreaker that when it came out. I mean, there were tears all over the forums then in Nintendo world of when the game you'd been waiting for your big fall game, then the next day you learn the rumors were true. The rumors you didn't want to believe all summer that, you know, Microsoft's going to buy Rare. And you're like, yeah, Nintendo's going to sell their 51% stake in Rare to Microsoft. Yeah, right. And then it happened.
Yeah. And like a lot of these Rare guys now do fun things that are related to their older games, like Yooka-Laylee and the 2D Yooka-Laylee. And those are pretty fun. But that was kind of the end of the Rare that we knew this game. And it wasn't really the Rare that we knew. They were changing.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of the game, you just fight Andros for like no reason. And that was another thing I remember hearing about it.
Yeah, his head comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, you beat the clearly planned final boss of the game. And then he's like, actually, it's Andros. And then Andros' head pops up like, time to shoot Andros.
Oh, you forgot about General Scales?
Yeah, yes, that's his name. Yeah.
Some consultant was like, yeah, look, we really need more Star Fox connections here. Can you add anything? Oh, Andros? I don't know.
People expect Andros here, and we can just take the 64 boss fight and like tweak it a little bit.
We have this monkey head lying around.
Can I just make a little aside ahead, and say...
Oh, yeah, sure.
After Star Fox 64, the game that I imagined in my head was leaving the Lylat system and maybe going from a solar system to like almost like a galaxy, right? Like going to many different locations. But they only ever stayed in the Lylat system, and it seemed to limit them somewhat. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's why you kept fighting Andros over and over again.
Preview for the end of this podcast, that's where Starlink comes in, and we'll talk more about that at the end. And I'm being completely serious here. Moving on to Star Fox Assault for the GameCube. By the way, none of these GameCube games are made available in any way because Nintendo hates money, doesn't want it. Even though you should be able to play this on a Switch.
They gave you Sunshine for 6 months, Bob. What do you want from them?
It was leased to me. Yeah. This is Star Fox's return to form, kind of, because Adventure is no longer a going concern for Nintendo. They're not going to make their own. Nintendo's like, hey, Namco, make us something. We're friends now, because at the time Nintendo, Namco, and Sega collaborated on the Triforce arcade board, which resulted in F-Zero AX, the arcade game, and Mario Kart Arcade GP. And apparently it was reported at IGN at the time that this was also going to be an arcade game, but that never came into being. So to date, there has not been a Star Fox sit-down arcade game, and that's a real damn shame.
That would have been dope.
I feel like if you look at the first stage of this game, it has strong arcade energy. It's like, sit down, okay, here's a giant space battle. There's ships everywhere. There's a score counter. You know, you're fighting smaller ships. You're fighting bigger ships. You're clearly going somewhere. And I can see it. I think they, you know, as whenever they pull the plug, whatever changes they made to make it more console appropriate, watching videos of this right now, it gave me a lot. It reminded me a lot of the Star Wars trilogy arcade game, in that just there was just tons of enemies everywhere, and you're basically moving, you know, down a corridor, and you've got to pick your shots, and you want to get the high score. I see it.
Now, I remember when these Triforce games got announced, and it was a rough time as a GameCube owner, because you're seeing a lot of the best third-party Japanese companies putting their games on the PlayStation 2, or maybe one or two on an Xbox like Ninja Gaiden. And so you'd welcome announcements like this, or the Capcom 5, we all remember. It'd be like, see, they're Japanese developers, they're still making games with Nintendo. It's not all over. And it sounded like such a great thing. Like, oh my God, they're going to hand out. They've got Sega taking care of F-Zero, and they got Namco with Star Fox. And this is going to be a real Star Fox, not like that last Star Fox.
And it kind of is. But the game went through a lot of development problems. It was announced in May of 2002 at E3. It was supposed to hit shelves 2 years before it actually did.
Wow, so it got announced before Adventures came out.
Yes, then. It did.
Wow.
Yeah, the game didn't surface again until E3 2003.
Roughly concurrently, I think. Like, I remember hearing about Star Fox Adventures and Star Fox Assault at roughly the same time and thinking, well, that's I want. I want the actual one.
Yeah, it was announced in 2002, didn't premiere again until 2003, and apparently I read this in a PDF of like an EGM at the time. The trailer was so bad people were booing it.
Whoa.
The trailer for Star Fox Assault. Or yeah. I think it was called Star Fox Armada at the time. It went through a few titles.
Yeah, boy, that's a far cry from the crying fanboys in the audience whenever they see Link do anything.
Yes. But yeah, so Assault went through a ton of changes. And originally it was going to be a multiplayer focused game, and I can see why, because Nintendo's got 4 controller ports and Halo 1 and 2 are taking over living rooms as this game is in development. Maybe they thought this could be Nintendo's Halo. And if you look at an early screenshot, you can see basically like a first person Fox hand holding a gun and pointing it. So that's where this was going.
Man, and it could have been so much worse.
Yeah. So It eventually turns into a variant of Star Fox with different modes of play, like an R-Wing, the tank, of course, and on-foot missions. And this kind of shows to me why Nintendo has been so gun-shy about following up Star Fox 64, is because that game is so good that if you make something similar to it, you'll just be thinking about Star Fox 64. And that if Star Fox Assault existed in its own world without Star Fox 64... it would be perfectly fine. It would be a good game. But when you're playing it, you're like, I've played 64, and this just feels like a lesser experience. And that was my own experience. And the on-foot stuff isn't that bad, but I say get back in the damn R-Wing.
Yes.
Stop walking around and doing stuff. Get in your damn R-Wing.
As I felt every single time.
Yeah.
I only beat, like, I think the first 3 worlds of it or whatever. I was like, every time he got out of that R-Wing, it pissed me off. Yeah,
and it feels like it was passed around Namco, because when it was announced, Namco said, oh yeah, Ace Combat developers will be working on it. That wasn't the case. This game is directed by the guy who directed Klonoa 2, which Klonoa 2 is a great game. I don't know if he was ready to make this game, but yeah, that's who directed this game.
Wow. Ace Combat makes so much sense. It feels... maybe that was the Armada game that then Nintendo was like, actually, we will find a different director for this game.
Yeah. Again, a lot of development stuff is lost to time and secrecy. But I think a lot of this was born out of the fear at the time where, no, a box game needs to be 60 hours or whatever. You need to get as much out of this as you can. And the fear is, well, if we might make a bunch of like linear fast stages like in Sonic the Hedgehog, the game will be over so fast. Consumers will be mad. So I think they're more open on foot and tank stages were the answer to that. Like, let's make it a lot slower. Let's make it a lot bigger. And that will very much pad out these faster flight stages. But Star Fox 64 is like a 30-minute experience, and it's so much fun each time. But there was an anxiety at this time that I think is falling away about making games a certain amount of hours. At least I hope it's falling away.
I rented it when it came out, and I finished it in a weekend without too much trouble. It's not that long of a game. But yeah, it's an interesting game to look back on. Like I said, I was playing it on my Steam Deck, and I'm like, wow, this game looks really good. Actually, it's like pretty fun to play and things like that. Of course, they add another new character. I think they add Panther is added into this one. He's on the Star Wolf team. He's the counterpart for Crystal. He's got that little bit of James from Team Rocket thing, where it's like the hopeless romantic with the rose and everything. I thought that the concept of having a stage where you would get out of the R-Wing to accomplish a mission on foot and then get back into the R-Wing and fly back out while like Star Wolf is buzzing around the station, I thought that was neat at the time. I actually really enjoyed that stage. I agree that the on-foot segments were the weakest part of Star Fox Assault for the most part, where you're like having to run around on this world with all of this bullet spam everywhere, looking for the cores to actually shoot. The flying bits were always consistently the absolute best moments in Star Fox Assault. The weird thing about this game mm-hmm. is that there's a lot of body horror in it. Various characters are dying and or being assimilated. Pygma gets turned into the Borg or something like that by the arachnid characters. I remember at the time thinking it was kind of crazy.
The enemies are weird space bugs, right?
Yeah, they are.
I think, yeah.
It's funny, Kat mentions renting it. This is where my Blockbuster Video story comes in. I was working at Blockbuster Video when this came out, and Blockbuster Video sucks. Awful place to work at. You should have no nostalgia for rental stores. Blockbuster, awful. Terrible company. I'm glad it's dead. But when I worked there, a nice thing was if you got in video games early, you could play those video games before Street Date, and then they had to be returned for rental. You couldn't take home a freebie of a game that could be rented, but if it was pre-Street Date, you play it. And I got that with Star Fox, and so I was like, wow, I'm playing Star Fox before release date. I'm like one of those guys who writes about video games at EGM. But also, Star Fox had a deal. Nintendo of America made a deal with Blockbuster that the game could be rented a week early at Blockbuster. It was early release. But at my Blockbuster, they didn't believe it. They got it sent early, and they're like, all right, put it on the shelves. And then they got a call from a competing rental place that said, hey, we heard you broke Street Date on Star Fox. We're calling our Nintendo rep right now. And I had to tell my manager, like, no, look, I'll show you the website of Nintendo.
Website?
It says I can take you to the Nintendo website that says we can rent it right now. But they didn't believe me because they were worried they were going to get, like, a thousands of dollars fine for breaking Street Date on Star Fox, even though they were allowed to. So that's
these sneaky undercover shoppers.
I know, yeah.
Coming in looking what you've broken Street Date on.
And now it's just crazy. As I'm telling that story, this is that John Mulaney joke about how old you sound describing renting a video from a video store. But seriously, that was how it felt at this battle to remember that we almost got narked on by a competitor because we broke Street Date on Star Fox.
Over Star Fox Assault.
Of all things, yes.
This game, I'll say what I said about Adventures. Some parts have not aged well based on it being a 3D game of that era, in that the ship combat's fine. And I love the ship stage that I played going back to it for this podcast. And then you're on foot. And I said, I'll give this a try. So my ship combat, my ship controls were inverted because that's the way I do things. And then I'm on foot and they're inverted on foot. Oh, no, I don't like this. Go to the pause menu. Oh, you can't change it in the pause menu because it's a game from 2005.
Yeah.
You lock in from the beginning what kind of controls you want, and then you're stuck with that. And it's like, well, my reticle's moving too fast. Can I adjust sensitivity? No. It's the year 2005. George W. Bush is president. And you can't adjust your reticle speed, okay? That's just
really
the way things work.
Just got inaugurated for a second.
That was really fun for the turret missions where you were standing on the ship and just shooting and enemies, and your reticles are all messed up. Wasn't super amazing. It was a very, shall we say, slapdash game. Like some really good parts and then some parts that clearly came together very quickly. But I have some fond memories of it. I remember nobody ever remembers the Star Fox Assault multiplayer, but it takes the Star Fox 64 multiplayer and dramatically expands it with way more ships, way more options and everything. It was never going to ever take off. Everybody was dragging Star Fox Assault when it came out. And it came out kind of late in the GameCube's life cycle, so everybody was fully out on the GameCube at that point. But it felt like it took a really good idea in the Star Fox 64 multiplayer and fully fleshed it out. It's a shame that nobody remembers it anymore.
Yeah, there's good stuff to find in this. It's a shame that these games can't be re-released. I mean, Nintendo chooses not to re-release them, I guess. That's the argument there. But I think there's stuff, the fun stuff to find in them, interesting game design ideas in them. But ultimately, it is a lot of the game is a third-person shooter from 2005, developed way before that. Mm. So that doesn't help it age well. And also, I don't think Nintendo wanted this. Maybe they did. But Namco had the ability to write Crystal and Tricky out of this series completely. But they are here in this game. I don't think they're in Zero. We'll talk more about that later. But I think finally in Zero, they've been executed by a military tribunal. No more Crystal and Tricky.
There's
in these games.
Wrong with Crystal
was not turning on.
She's a fine addition.
Crystal wasn't turning on Hideki Kamiya, so she wasn't invited to the game.
I'm more of a Cat fan, Cat.
I mean, that's fair.
Or Cat, Amanda.
Cat is pure evil, and I like her, so.
Yes. Or Slippy's wife, Amanda. Only seen in one game.
So if Namco made this, is this the first completely non-British Star Fox game? Like, no Brits,
Brits
whatsoever?
64 had no Brits, although they did use a lot of their code.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yes, no Brits until the next game. We'll talk about that very soon. But one cool feature about this game is that the entire soundtrack is orchestrated by the Tokyo New City Orchestra. So if you just want to listen to the soundtrack, it's all on YouTube, and it sounds great. It's mostly remixes of the original Star Fox music, but we weren't really doing that a lot in 2005, so it's just fun to hear that.
If you're a shrewd shopper, it's about to be your favorite time of the year. HyperX will be running massive sales for the holiday season. Get up to 50% off some of our most popular products like the ultra-comfy Cloud 2 headset, the tough, responsive Alloy Origins mechanical keyboard, and the fan-favorite Quadcast USB microphone. Sales will be going on at all major e-tailers, but be sure to head to HyperX.com and sign up for the newsletter to get the scoop on the biggest deals. Happy holidays from HyperX.
So we're going to move on next to Star Fox Command for the DS. I almost said 3DS. So this came out in August of 06 in Japan and the USA. And yeah, after outsourcing a few games, the series goes back to its roots with this co-production between Dylan Cuthbert's Q Games and Nintendo. And my experience with this game is I game-flied it, played 20 minutes, kept losing, kept dying, sent it back to hell where it belongs. This time, I bought a copy of it at Portland Retro Gaming Expo, and I was like, I'll give this one a shot. And initially, the difficulty curve is really hard to get over. It's hard to internalize all of the rules and the tactical system in the game. But once I got into it, I found it to be a very, very fun game, but probably not what people were looking for from a new Star Fox game in 2006. But yes, I will admit the game... You hit a wall in the first mission, and it takes a long time, multiple attempts to get over that wall, but it really was worth it for me, and I really couldn't stop playing it over the past couple of days.
Man, this was one I didn't even give a chance. After Assault, and then seeing that, like, oh, it's on the DS with wacky controls that I didn't fully understand, and a slightly changed gameplay, I was like, this, I'm done with Star Fox, I guess. I only, a few years later, once I entered the games press for some listicle I wrote, that's when I discovered the many storyline implications of this game that made it at least very important to Star Fox lore, if not as a game I'd want to play.
They're having fun in this game with the story. Yeah. any other first-hand experiences with this game before I talk about more about it, how it's played, how it was developed, etc.?
Yeah, I bought Star Fox Command at launch because I buy all Star Fox games at launch as a rule. And I was a little nonplussed by this game, I have to say. It felt like a return, I suppose, to the original Star Fox in terms of the looks. I did not realize at the time that the folks who worked on it were the kind of the original developers in Q Games. And the tactical map, or the strategy map, I should say, was kind of interesting. It felt like a little bit like a board game, I suppose. I didn't realize, again, at the time that it was effectively Star Fox 2, but kind of repurposed for the Nintendo DS. I enjoyed playing some of the bite-sized missions. I didn't like it as much as I did Star Fox 64. I found it quite challenging. It's a very hard game. The actual controls were really hard to use. I remember my hand like developing a horrible claw trying to get to that thing to work with the touch screen. And ultimately, while I did get one or two of the endings, it got so hard that at a certain point, I just couldn't do it anymore. Like, one of the missions that was really hard is you're chasing after a missile or something in like a slipstream, and you're trying to shoot it down. It's very, very difficult, especially with the controls in Star Fox Command. And there came a point where I was like, I can't do this. And that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool ideas, but per usual with a lot of British games, as we were kind of alluding to in the other episode, a lot of cool ideas, but maybe the actual game tech was just being stretched to the limit, right? It's like having multiple different ships with different performance characteristics and lots of different missions and multiple endings. The game couldn't support it, ultimately.
Yeah, the controls are of the mandatory touch controls era. In some games, it makes sense because the games are designed around that. In this game, it doesn't make sense because this could all be repurposed for the controls on the DS and be fine. Actually, there's a fan-made patch where you can download it, patch your game, and you can actually use the D-pad to control the R-Wing.
Oh,
I kind of want to try
that. Use the buttons
that.
As buttons. Yeah. It would make the game much
better.
More playable because, yeah. But yeah, the way the game plays is that you use your stylus on the touchpad to steer your plane, but it also does a lot of other stuff, like scratching it back and forth makes you do a barrel roll. You actually have to touch buttons on the touchpad in order to do a U-turn and things like that. And you also have to use the touchpad to drag bombs onto the map to blow up big targets. So a lot of it, they did what they could, and they were probably forced to do this, but a lot of it is like you taking your eyes off of the play screen, looking down at the touch screen with no real information on it in order to do certain things in the game, and that really messes with things. The tactical part of the game is very hard, too, because it's like Star Fox 2 in that you're protecting a base, but in this case, the stakes are much higher and the missions are much shorter because it's a DS game and they want you to be able to like close it or, you know, play it multiple times, you know, if you're on the bus or on the train or whatever. In this case, you're protecting the Great Fox, the mobile command unit or whatever, the mobile command ship. And you have to take out various bases and missile silos with a prescribed number of turns. If one group of enemies touches that Great Fox, if one missile touches it, the mission is over.
Mm.
It doesn't take damage. It is gone. It is dead. The thing is, you have to kind of know where everything on the map is first before you start playing. And the only way to do that is to lose multiple times. It's sort of like the Advance Wars problem, which is why I don't like those games. Which is even harder here because you can't make new units.
Mm-hmm.
So you play the same missions over and over, and as you play them over and over, you're like, okay, now this time I'll go this way, and the missile will not hit the base. I'll intercept the missile, but you have to play it over and over in order to know where things are, because there's fog of war in the tactical simulation of this game.
Well, you're really bringing me back, Bob. It's all coming back into my memory.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm feeling traumatized all over again by this game.
And it's like you have such limited resources because you have limited turns. If you use up all your turns and enemies are still left, the game is over. So you have to effectively take out bases to earn more turns that will let you explore more. I mean, there is so much going on here that it took me like 4 tries to finally finish the first mission. And the first mission is too hard. The next ones are much, much easier. But I think they want to make sure, are you ready to play this game? But that turned me off initially in 2006.
That is such a nuts way to design it, too, because it's like Star Fox, to most gamers, if they know the name as anything, it's like pick up and play ease. Like, you get straight into it, and then you combine it with the, you know, it's early DS, but this is, you know, by this point, The DS is known for the Nintendogs machine. Well, I guess even not that early DS. It's two years in.
Yeah,
they know it as it's the Nintendogs machine. It's the brain, big brain.
It's
Academy
the weird
machine.
Touchscreen inventive game machine. They even used a freaking stylus for Ninja Gaiden, right? So let's use the stylus for everything.
Yeah, it's shockingly hard, both in terms of like the performance you have to put out and in terms of the tactical thinking you have to do to win the game. And Kat was talking about the slipstream earlier with the missiles. Yes, missiles come towards the Great Fox. The Great Fox cannot shoot those down. It can shoot other enemies down with limited missiles, but when a missile is approaching the Great Fox, you have to get in the way of the missile and the Great Fox intercept it. And then once you do that, you play a mini game where you have to follow it through a slipstream while hitting targets and shooting at it. And if you fuck that up, the mission is over. The missile hits the Great Fox, and the mission is over, and you start from the beginning again.
God damn.
Yeah, the dogfights were pretty unforgiving, too, with those.
Yeah, that too.
The touchscreen controls just ultimately drag this game down so much.
Yeah, I totally agree, and it will never happen. This game could benefit from a remake with real controls and maybe making the maps a little less tricky to get into. But
oh, I see what
I think... Oh no, I didn't do that on purpose. I'm sorry. But I think if you want to try this out, get a few endings like Kat did back in the day. Play a few missions. Don't let the first mission turn you off. I know I'm not selling it very well, but I was surprised by the design of this game is very cool. They just made it way too hard and the controls aren't very good. But I can respect what's going on under the hood. It even looks very good for a 3D DS game. A DS game with all polygons on it.
They unfortunately fleshed out the lore a lot. And this is not a universe that benefits from fleshed out lore. So you get various endings like Slippy having kids. That's fine. Fox dumping Crystal and then Crystal going to the dark side and becoming Cursed. Like literally that's her name, Cursed. And...
Punish Snake, right.
She's
cursed with a K.
Or, this is kind of a cool ending. Fox and Falco apparently join an F-Zero racing team, and it confirms that F-Zero and Star Fox are in the same universe. And that, I think, is what gave rise to those Star Fox GP rumors from, 5 years ago. So...
Right.
Oh, yeah.
If you ever want to have, a laugh... And B, just have your mind kind of blown. Go back and look at those Star Fox Command endings because there are some wild ones in there.
Yeah, that's how I learned about it because I was doing some listicle and I was like, some funny listicle of surprising things about whatever. And of course, a listicle, if you're writing a listicle in 2008, time to make jokes about Slippy. and that's when I went to a Wikipedia and found out wait, Slippy got married in one ending? What? This game? I mean, I didn't even realize Command had multiple endings and had all these cut scenes you could see of this just wacky stuff of that happens. I probably, if I had actually played to the end of those, I don't think I would have in 2006 had the sense of humor about them. I would have been thinking Star Fox is not a joke. He's mourning his dead father. How dare you?
I mean, 64 takes the lore very seriously, and that's part of the fun, where it's just these funny puppet animals, but they're all being very melodramatic. And this game, my initial reaction when I was in my early 20s was this is so wacky, it's weird. But playing it again, I was oh, they know it's wacky. They're having fun with these weird characters. So you meet Slippy. Slippy has left the R-Wing world because he found his first girlfriend and he becomes a total wife guy. And he's actually kind of a jerk. they're kind of razzing Slippy in a cutscene. And he says, at least I have a girlfriend. And I tweeted that out. Everyone loved it. I was I was laughing at the dialogue in these cutscenes. Everybody is played up because they're kind of very flat characters. So they're just having fun with them. And the endings are part of that. And in one ending, I was talking about, Crystal breaks up with Fox and there's tears streaming down his face as he's reaching out towards her and she's running towards the camera. They're having so much fun with the characters, and I like that interpretation because they're who is Slippy? I don't care. Make him a jerk this time.
I mean, I kind of love her joining Star Wolf. I think that's cool.
Me too.
Make her a bad girl.
Once again, Fox McCloud was forced to wander the world alone and unloved. It's really benefit from a dramatic reading, I think.
Yeah, there was no voiceover, unfortunately. But this game is notable, and that is the only Star Fox game with online multiplayer. Well, not anymore. Star Fox 3DS, couldn't do it for some reason. Star Fox Wii U, no way in hell is it happening. This game, through the whatever that connection was called that's been defunct since like 2014.
To take it to a McDonald's hotspot.
Yes.
Play, just like I played Mario Kart as well.
You don't have to go to McDonald's.
Well, that was the local hotspot in my neighborhood.
Mm. But yes, that is Star Fox Command. You can actually download this on the Wii U eShop if you still have access to it.
Clock's ticking on that, though, too.
But you can't buy them directly online. If you want to buy a Wii U game, you have to buy a gift card, a Nintendo card, and then put the card into the Wii U.
Oh, boy.
Not literally, of course, but put the code into the Wii U.
You have to say that because it almost is that complicated of physically inserting a card.
Just show it to the Wii U. Just like turn it around in front of it. But yeah, I didn't sell this game very well, but I say give it a chance if you want. It's kind of interesting. Up next is Star Fox Zero for the Wii U. So let's talk about 2016, everybody.
That's a long time between games there.
Yes, an entire decade. Yeah. Wii U, we were all there. A lot of us were covering. I think everyone on this call was covering the Wii U. Rough time for Nintendo. Worse than the GameCube. 3DS doing okay. It couldn't possibly be the same hit as the original DS. So Zero releases at the tail end of the Wii U life cycle, 1 year before the debut of the Switch. And it was the game that it wasn't going to save the Wii U, but it was like one last effort that didn't really work. And this game came into being because Miyamoto and a small team in the Wii era were working on various ideas for a Wii Star Fox game, but none of their ideas really panned out. And Star Fox Zero entered development when they wanted to do something with these prototypes they've developed. And that's essentially how it came into being. Like, there was never a Wii Star Fox game, but they wanted to incorporate ideas they thought of for a potential Wii game into their new platform. And I assume a lot of that must have been, like, gyroscope aiming and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, man, it's nutty to think of that time. My first E3 I attended was the one they announced the Wii U. And, I mean, it makes a certain sense, you know, that they're like, what was their? They had just made the money printing machines of the DS and the Wii.
I've seen the GIF.
So why not take? Oh, we had a DS that's so successful. 3DS. We had the Wii that's so successful. Wii U. This will continue to make us money. Like it's not rocket science. And yet, yeah, the 3DS almost was a gigantic failure, and they made a Hail Mary pass with that, and then the Wii U just was like, it just was a big old failure, and it sucked. It's just as I'm starting to become the Nintendo guy of my company I'm working for, a horrible, horrible thing for me personally.
Yeah, your job was riding on the success of the Wii U.
I know. Instead, oh Henry, go play your Wii U games. Come on, guys,
having fun in Nintendo Land.
I'm Super Mario 3D World is really good, guys. I swear.
You said that on the last podcast.
This era of Nintendo is what taught me the phrase the last blockbuster syndrome, not related to the video store. It's the idea that Nintendo had some successes with things that they didn't expect to be received as well. Like, you know, like the Wii was so much, outsold their expectations. The 3DS struggled, but then it seemed to recover. So that convinced them, oh, we just need to keep doing this. We need to keep making more of this stuff. And they completely ignored the fact that smartphones and tablets were blowing up, and then by the time the Wii U launched, like, oh, here's our new console, and everyone's like, this looks ridiculous. What do you want me to? You want me to play an iPad while I'm playing on your system? What are you talking about? And like, just they seemed completely behind the times and out of it. And yeah, it took them a few years to dig themselves out of the hole. And Star Fox Zero didn't really help them with that, but they tried. I think more than the other games we've talked about so far today, this is one that really. They pushed, you know, like again, you mentioned Miyamoto. Miyamoto was like the face of this game in a way he wasn't the face of many games in this era at all. Like even the Mario and Zelda games had moved on beyond Miyamoto, and other people had them to champion them. But here he is like, oh, I want to make a Star Fox game, so I'm the supervising director. I haven't done this in 20 years. Like, okay, you really wanted this, man. All right, here it is. Is it good?
It was kind of born out of those random prototypes that he made. Remember the E3, where they didn't really seem to have much to show, if I recall correctly, but they did have the Miyamoto prototypes. And they're like, look, Miyamoto's back in development. He made some prototypes. Mm-hmm. And at least one of them eventually became Star Fox Zero, or it developed into Star Fox Zero eventually. And
also the side games that came with Star Fox Zero.
Yeah.
The Star Fox, yes, exactly.
Folks, I hate to alarm you, but the holidays are rapidly approaching. This time of year brings plenty of joy to us all, but at the cost of causing much more stress in the 6 to 8 weeks leading up to the main event. There's more errands to run, things to bake, odd-shaped items to wrap, and no matter what we do, there's no way to delay the inevitable. I mean, what are you gonna do, steal Christmas? Buddy, you just try that in our current surveillance state. There's no way to make the holiday woes go away completely, especially for small businesses, but to increase your jolly levels through the end of the year, there's no better service than stamps.com. Used by over 1 million businesses, stamps.com can help you with all of your mailing and shipping needs, and you can do everything with your own computer and printer. No special equipment is necessary. Stamps.com also helps you save money as well as time with up to 86% off USPS and UPS rates. And I haven't even mentioned all the features of stamps.com that can help eliminate the stress of running a small business. If you're running an online store, you'll be happy to know that stamps.com works seamlessly with all major marketplaces and shopping carts. You can easily schedule a package pickup through the Stamps.com dashboard, and by using the Switch and Save feature, you can compare different carriers and rates so you know you're getting the most bang for your buck. This holiday season, trade late nights for silent nights and get started with Stamps.com today. Sign up with the promo code RETRO for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page and enter the code RETRO. That's offer code RETRO, RETRO, at stamps.com.
No, that E3 2014, that was the thing I teased at the start of this, where I actually got to directly ask Miyamoto a question that was like the most. I got to go to the pre-show press day and see, I was one of the part of the press group that got shown Star Fox for the first time, and I got to be like, wow, they're finally bringing back Star Fox. This is great. But yeah, it was so raw and new. And the whole point of that entire presentation that Miyamoto was definitely the face of was his way of saying, like, everybody thinks the Wii U sucks. Well, we made all of these prototypes that you could only play on the Wii U that have all these motion-based and second-screen things. We're showing it off. Don't say the Wii U's dead. I Miyamoto, am saying it's not dead. And he shows Star Fox Zero, well, a new Star Fox game. And, yeah, that was when I got to directly ask him a question. And my question was, my thought was, are you going to develop this as a first-party Nintendo game for the first time forever, or are you guys working with a second party? And I asked that in a nice way of like, you know, Star Fox games have worked with the second parties a lot. Is this going to do that too, or third parties? And he's like, we're talking to people. Like, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because they didn't really know. They had an idea for Star Fox Zero, and they had some ideas floating around. But I was reading an article by Chris Kohler.
What? Who's that?
A friend of the show, Chris Kohler, from this era, where Miyamoto had a quote that was like, we're looking for developers to help us out with this. We'd really like to reach out to some people. And the way this was announced was Time launched an article before embargo. Gasp.
I remember that. We saw it all on fucking Sunday. Yeah, it was. No. Yes, it was the Sunday beforehand. Like, Reggie told me where to sit. That was a fun day. But anyway, and the Time dude was there. And then the next day, it leaked, and we're all just like, okay, email the Nintendo rep, ask if we can leak our Star Fox stuff now, because Time leaked. You know, that was, I completely forgot about that five-alarm fire of our Nintendo coverage.
Yeah, I was in the press then. I think I was at US Gamer probably by that point, but I do remember that. And so Nintendo had to make a teaser, like, oh, crap, the game's announced. And the teaser, it's still online. It's like Miyamoto playing it, but the TV is blurred out. He's like, oh boy, if only you could see it. Oh, wait till next year. That's kind of what it was. And then in June of 2015, Nintendo had stopped doing, you know, in-person E3 conferences. They stopped in, what, like 2012, I believe?
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
I went to the last one. You were probably there too.
Yeah, the Nintendo Land one. What a big fireworks to go out on there.
Yeah, the pre Wii U launch E3 presentation. But this rules because it's still online, as is all this stuff. But this announcement of Star Fox Zero has, you know, Henson Company created puppets of Iwata, of Miyamoto, and of Reggie. And they all, like, are told to go out on stage, and they transform into the Star Fox characters, except for Slippy, but who cares? And it's great. It's like, and also, Iwata died a month later.
That fucking sucked, man. Yes. Yeah, that was rough. I remember I wondered when it happened. I was like, oh, is that why they went with puppets? Because he was doing so poorly, he couldn't actually, like, film a thing. Like, yeah, it added a real... Star Fox Zero just cannot catch a break, man, with its, yes, with its PR.
I was just thinking of the shadow cast upon Star Fox Zero, because we had the death of Iwata, we had the death of the Wii U, and also it came out during the 2016 primaries, where it's like, politics are getting a little interesting here, and I don't like it.
Wow, man, I forgot that too.
Yes.
Darkest of days. I previewed Star Fox Zero when it was shown for the first time, and they were really talking up the connections to Star Fox 64. And Bob, I think you were alluding to earlier that if you played a different Star Fox game than 64, you just automatically started comparing it mentally. And they tried to own that connection, but it wasn't working for me, because even though they went with like a kind of a stylized look to it, to me, it just kind of made it look old, unfortunately. And then, the Wii U gamepad controls were just a major problem from the very start. So I would say that even by Wii U standards, the hype for this game was quite low, sadly.
Yeah. I don't think anyone trusted it after being disappointed by past Star Fox games.
And didn't Iwata already, right before death, talk about the NX? Like, he was already...
Oh, it was called the NX. I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So it was already hanging over the Wii U anyway. They're like, well, this system's effectively dead as it is.
Yeah, the Switch would launch less than a year after this game launched for the Wii U. And there would still be new Wii U games after that, believe it or not. But, yeah, so the way this development worked is Nintendo needs to get this game out the door as soon as possible, because the curtain is closed on the Wii U already, but they need to make the most of it before the Switch comes out. This is when they turned to Platinum Games, who has been known to save certain games at this point in time, because they really turned around Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. A year later, they would really help Nier Automata become an amazing game. I like when they do this. I like when they kind of rescue games, or they help a team who really doesn't do action that well, they help them figure it out. And I think Platinum Games even worked on the Nier Replicant remake to make the combat more interesting. Mm-hmm. I think they worked on that as well.
I'm saying this before Bayonetta 3 comes out, and I have no knowledge of how good or not that game is, but I think a lot of the times Platinum is at their best is when they're partnered with another strong publisher or developer that can give them the support they need. Like, I think, too, you saw with their very... paycheck cashing work on those Activision games, which are still actually kind of all right. Like, Transformers Devastation is a pretty all right game, but you can tell it's them, like, well, you guys paid for a 6 out of 10 and we're giving it to you. Like, that's,
yeah,
they're not working much harder than that.
Hey, they did their job.
Yeah.
But yeah, Bayonetta 2's director directs this game. Yeah, Yusuke Hashimoto. He's no longer with Platinum. He left in like 2019. But Bayonetta 2 is so awesome. And there's a flying stage in Bayonetta 2 that's very much like a Star Fox mission. And if you wear the Star Fox costume for that mission, you transform into an R-Wing. And Nintendo was very tickled by this, which is why they wanted him to direct the game. And apparently, as early as 2010, Kamiya, one of the big Platinum guys, in the press was saying, Platinum Games wants to make a Star Fox. Let us make a Star Fox. So the seed was growing throughout the 2010s.
Definitely when I got that part in Bayonetta 2, though I didn't unlock that Easter egg the first time I played it, even just playing that flight mission, I was like, this kind of feels like Star Fox. I definitely had a Star Fox thought while playing it.
Yeah. And like in the Bayonetta 1, there's like a Space Harrier level too, or a hang-on level. I forget. Every level is different in those games. That's why they're so amazing. But yeah, this game, my own like speculation about Miyamoto is he's not that into the Switch. I feel like Miyamoto loved the 3DS, loved the DS. He loves Labo. I think he's into Labo. But the Switch is just a game device with a regular controller and a TV or a screen. When I'm seeing him talk about Star Fox Zero, I get the sense like, oh yeah, this is the Miyamoto I remember, where it's like everything has got to be this fun toy-like interaction. Like, there's got to be some novelty to it, when a lot of people don't want that. And so much of this game is built around that novelty. Novelty that I think is very cool, but the Wii U technology is not up to the challenge of delivering on that sense of novelty. It just makes the experience frustrating, although I did actually enjoy this game.
You know, you're really making me think about how Miyamoto engages with the press these last, like, 5 years, because, yeah, very rarely is he the face of a game anymore. And, like, some might have thought, like, after Iwata passed away, that, like, oh, the guy who's going to host Nintendo Directs now is Miyamoto, right? And, no, it's usually Koizumi, who also is a long, long time Nintendo employee as well. But, yeah, Miyamoto, my husband and I joke that it's because Miyamoto has gone Hollywood. He's been working on that movie for years now. And so he's like, these video games boring. I'm working with Chris-san over in Los Angeles.
He loves stomping Koopas.
So he's just Koopas. Like Hideo Kojima now. Miyamoto went full Hideo Kojima.
Kind of, yeah. Kojima still technically makes a game with famous people, though. Yeah,
when it comes to the gyro controls with Star Fox Zero, first of all, this was the period where we started getting into the Star Fox cycle. You know, you have the Sonic cycle, the Star Fox cycle is, oh, new Star Fox game. Oh my God, they introduced some kind of gimmick. Why is this? Why can't they just make a freaking rail shooter? That's all we want at this point. The other thing is that I think Star Fox Zero, in a way, was on the right track, because it was having this concept of gyro controls and you're aiming by, you know, moving the actual gamepad and everything. And they had actually tried something similar with Star Fox 64 3D with the gyro controls on that, which everybody immediately turned off because they weren't very good. But clearly Nintendo was very taken with this. The thing was, Splatoon was a game that perfected this, and it was much better for first-person shooters than a kind of dynamic, you're like constantly in motion, shoot 'em up rail shooter like Star Fox Zero, sadly.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that, because at E3 2014, you know, Star Fox got all the first headlines, but Splatoon was there too.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And some people even wrote up Splatoon like, well, this looks like a cute little side thing or whatever. Like, there wasn't a lot of faith. Even I was like, thought like, oh, I guess this is like one of your new little things, right? And like, now it's so much, it's like 10 Star Foxes in popularity. Yeah.
And so in theory, I like the concept for this game, in that, you know, you have your TV you're playing with and your Wii U gamepad. On the Wii U gamepad, you have the cockpit of the ship, and you can use the Wii U gamepad to actually do more precise aiming. But you can also aim via your TV screen with your typical R-Wing controls. Nintendo, not fully confident in this, you can turn all of that off. You can use the select button to switch between the gamepad and the TV screen. You can swap screens whenever you want. So technically, you don't have to engage in that at all, but it's the way the game is designed to be played. In theory, I like that. In practice, it involves jamming the Y button every 10 seconds to recalibrate the Wii U gamepad, because it doesn't know where you are. And the concept for this game makes me think that it's inevitable that Nintendo will do more with VR, and I think the future of Star Fox is VR. Like, this kind of game is built for VR, and it's almost a VR experience, because you kind of have like a VR helmet that you're holding in your hand for precise aiming, but then you've got the actual ship moving on the screen.
Yeah, see, that disconnect was always a problem for me with Zero whenever I played it. I didn't even buy it when it came out, but every time I like demoed it or played it, I was like, it's just my brain just can't make the connection. It can't. If I played it more, I would have.
I got pretty good with those gyro controls, actually, and I found that it was almost kind of essential when you were fighting the final boss to be able to have the precise aiming that you would need with those. I was playing in the cockpit, too, a lot. And Bob, saying things like, this is a precursor to a Star Fox VR game, don't play with my heart like that. Like, I will buy a Nintendo Switch VR headset, no matter how bad it is, if they actually make one of those things.
I honestly think they love experimenting with this series, and I think this could be the future. And yeah, I got very good at this game too, because when I first started playing it, I was like, oh no, is this what I'm in for? And then you get used to using the Wii U gamepad as both you know, a way to move your plane and also to do precise aiming with the gamepad on that screen itself. And I was actually having fun with things that at first seemed like a terrible idea. Like, there is a hovercraft in the game that's basically like a drone mission. Your first mission with that is a stealth mission. So I was like, all right, number one, you're making me do a stealth mission with a drone. This is going to suck. I had fun with that mission. It sounds like a bad idea.
I hated that mission so much.
I actually liked that mission. Yeah, people were yelling at me for saying I liked it. the controls are so cool. I'm still tickled by this 10-year-old technology where it makes me miss, like, you can do so much stuff with this double screen that you can't do now. And I really miss it. But this game, like I said earlier, the Wii U was not ready for this game. It should have been a launch game because this game came out 4 years after the Wii U launch, or nearly 4 years. And by that point in a system's life cycle, they stop using all the, you know, technology of the actual inputs. It's like, no, just play the game like you play any game. But this feels like it was a launch game in terms of, no, use everything. Use every part of the Wii U. You have to turn up your volume on your speaker to hear the codec calls on it because it's not coming through any other speaker.
Oh, man. That shows you just how bad the Wii U was, because like this in the past this would have been the thing they have ready for launch, like this, and I guess Nintendo Land was supposed to be that. It's like, oh, it uses every trick, but it didn't do it particularly well. Like, this at least feels like what would be, you know, Super Mario 64, in that it showed off all the things an N64 could do at the start. But in this case, it's like, it comes out when the system's effectively is dead. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, Color Splash is still coming.
Do we know why it's called Star Fox Zero? Like, what's the angle there? Because it's not a prequel, is it?
There's something going on with the kanji, and that the kanji and zero could make like the tail on the Star Fox logo, I think. That could be all there is to it, as far as I know. And yeah, I went into this thinking,
is it a reference to the classic World War II plane?
It could be. I don't know.
I mean, that's a fighter plane.
When I went into it, I was like, this is the prequel, right? And then I start playing. It's like, no, it's another remake of 64. It's another reinterpretation of that story. So it's like, you're not going to learn how they all meet. You're kind of doing the same things, but in a different context with these new controls. And it's not like it's a remake, but using a lot of the same ideas. And like I said earlier, there is no crystal that I could find in this game. Well, they went back to basics. They eliminated crystal, but Kat is still here. So is Bill. So is all your 64 friends. A diamond.
Command advanced, you know, we talked about, you know, the sort of the wackiness of it, but basically Command did advance the story in different directions and had different endings. But even from the start, it took place, you know, after many of the events from previous games. So if you played Command and you enjoyed it and you play Star Fox Zero, it kind of like, oh, I'm going back now. Because like the dog general has retired in Command. But if you play Star Fox Zero, the dog general is right back. And, you know, it's so it is 64 again, but it's not before 64. They couldn't call it 63, so they call it Zero. I was very confused by these things.
I think that's a testament to Miyamoto's involvement in it, that he said, fuck this lore. I'm starting back over again.
And it's all simple conversations.
Miyamoto doesn't do lore, damn it.
Yeah. No, and he despises if you try to put it into his games. But yeah, like I said earlier, this game could be better, but I appreciate all of the work that went into it, and I'm sure a lot of people didn't play it. And again, Platinum Games did co-produce this, and I respect them a lot. They were put up to a challenge, and they tried their best. It's really the Wii U's fault. It's not the game's fault. Don't blame the game, everybody, because the game, I think, is pretty cool. And I'd say give it a chance if you somehow missed it, and you probably did. Most people did.
And this is one of, like, the only Wii U games that's not getting a port to the Switch.
Yeah.
Still hasn't. It could happen, but probably not.
I don't know how. I mean, I guess if you pair your iPhone with your Switch or something.
Hey, they made Skyward Sword work somehow. They could make this work.
That's right.
There's a lot of love put into little things in this game that I appreciate. The fact that, you know, if you have your amiibo, you can basically play as an old, you know, as a limited poly ship, like the old ships. And the fact that, you know, this came out 2016, so this is before they resurrected Star Fox 2 from the deletion file. So they put, like, a walker feature that was in Star Fox 2, they put it in this game at a time when no one really knew that was existed. And then a few years later, people saw Star Fox 2 and, oh, the little walker thing is there. So you really, it's fun to see these little things that they went back into Star Fox history and pulled these things out and put them in this game. So they put a lot of effort and care into this, that it just didn't click and it didn't find an audience. And part of that, I think, as you said, Bob, was the console's fault. But
yeah,
I think another problem that I think about this, Star Fox in general has, I think, you know, looking at all the games we talked about today, is that Star Fox just never managed to get this identity. You know, Star Fox, Star Fox 2, Star Fox 64 all had a very clear, you know, through line with certain characters and certain expectations of how to play the game. And the rest of these games are just kind of like, oh, here's an adventure game. Put Star Fox on it. oh, we need a strategy game. Put Star Fox on it. It just feels like, oh, here about an arcade. How about Star Fox Arcade? And it feels like they're just throwing things at the wall and like, will Star Fox do this? Will Star Fox do this? And I feel like that really hurt it in the long run, because it just became this sort of mercenary, well, let's put Star Fox in here, and no one. It went in every direction, and as a result, it went nowhere. So,
I wish
frustrating.
I wish they had had a more of a clear creative direction to what Diamond was saying. I think that when it comes to a Star Fox, they got trapped in this mindset that it could only be a rail shooter, and so therefore we must always be experimenting with it. Rail shooters can never work, and when they got stuck into this mindset, then Star Fox, I suppose, got treated as this second or third class franchise, which I think is too bad. I think in a way they actually were on the right track, maybe, by kind of rethinking what Star Fox could have been. And I kind of wish that they had really gone for it in reimagining Star Fox wholesale. Keep like the elements that you know, like the Lylat system and vehicular combat and stuff, but turn it into an RPG. That's all I ask. I want a Star Fox RPG. That's what I'm saying.
It could still happen. Yeah, I don't want to go on too long about this game. Again, please play it if you have access to it. But there are some really cool, like, Platinum game style moments in this game. I'm looking forward to play the rest to see them. In one of the earlier missions, you're fighting this giant starship that has a shield around it, and it's blasting like giant lasers through its shield. You have to fly in through the shield as it's flying its giant laser. You fly around to the back of the ship, you turn into a walker, walk inside the ship, and then blow up its core and fly out.
Oh, that part,
it's such a really cool moment.
It's really hard, too. Yeah.
It is, but I feel like so many people didn't get to see that moment, and it's so cool, and it's very true to, like, Star Fox, and it's incorporating so many of the ideas, like the transforming R-Wings, going inside of the ships and firing at the cores, like in the first game. It's all working, but with controls that are a little off.
Okay.
But yeah, that's all I'll say, and pleasantly surprised.
Turning into the Walker is very Macross-like, and there is a show called Macross Zero. Was this an elaborate reference to Macross? That's what I'm asking.
Is there a Gundam Zero?
No, sadly. And the Gundams do transform, but they don't turn into walkers. They turn into jets. So so there we go. Like, well, wait a minute. I'm stupid. Whatever. Just ignore me. Of course they're walkers. It's Macross. It's just the R-Wings are just going full Macross in this series. I had totally forgotten about the walker aspect. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's just a Valkyrie. Yeah. You're right.
Those are all the games. Let's cover some odds and ends that we need to talk about, like cameo appearances, other media, and we have to mention Smash Brothers, because the original Smash Brothers launches in April of 99. Star Fox, still very relevant. And I think Smash Brothers, along with many other characters, has kept Fox alive and in the public memory, because he was in the original roster. He'll always be in the game. He's part of the No Items Fox Only Final Destination meme.
Yeah. He's an S-tier character in the competitive scene for Smash.
Falco's added with Melee. I forgot that Wolf is one of the characters in the game. He was added with Brawl. So there are three Star Fox characters in Smash perpetually throughout time.
He never did Crystal. I couldn't believe it. If Banjo-Kazooie got in the game before Crystal did, I couldn't believe that.
I'm glad.
Boy, let me tell you about it. I played Smash Brothers 1 and Melee so much with me and my brother and my bros. And my younger brother, he played Fox all the time. It makes me hate Fox. I actually hate... I just can... Echoing in my brain, even now, the sound of Fox having a shield up, then rolling and shooting you, just like the chick-pew, 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 over and over. It reminds me of my brother driving me crazy. And then the satisfying sound of finally breaking his shield and being able to like hit him with a smash. Some of my favorite moments of Smash Brothers.
His damn bicycle kick was so OP. I used Fox... when I wanted to win in Super Smash Brothers Melee, which is funny. He felt he had some good stages too. Smash Brothers Brawl was where they brought back the original Star Fox soundtrack that you could play on some of the Star Fox maps. And let me tell you, I always played the Corneria music when I was doing the when I had those themes up, because they let you choose the actual music.
Yeah, and I think in Brawl also, that's when they introduced the codec calls for all of your teammates as taunts.
Yes.
So if you're in a certain Star Fox stage and can do the taunts, there's a chance you'll actually bring up one of the radio calls from Star Fox. And then I linked to this video because Solid Snake is in Brawl 2. You can have various codec calls with characters in that game. And there is a moment in Nintendo history in which Snake has a conversation with Slippy. This happens.
In Brawl, he also had one of the most overpowered final smashes, because he could call down the Landmaster and trap everybody on it and just lift off into space to remove them right off the map. And if you didn't do that, you could just shoot.
Oh, yeah.
You could just shoot the cannon. It was so overpowered that people banned final smashes as a result. Typical Fox.
Too OP. He was too fast for me to play as and play against.
Yeah, no, I Mario is more my speed, or DK. I really loved the Star Fox stage that was fighting on top of R-Wings and the Great Fox. Like that was a great stage.
Until the R-Wing lifted off into the air and took you off the stage again. Ridiculous.
Not fair. We have to move on, though, to the comic, which Kat brought up in the first podcast, and I said, no, next episode. But yes, Nintendo Power trying to indoctrinate children to all Japanese media was like, hey, you like Japanese video games? What about Japanese comics? You like those too, huh? And most of us read manga for the first time without realizing it in the pages of Nintendo Power. And yes, there was a Star Fox comic serialized in Nintendo Power throughout all of 93. It actually premiered in the magazine before the game launched in order to build hype for it. And this is not... So the Zelda manga and the Mario manga from Nintendo Power were collected into books and sold that way. This never was, but you can read it all online very easily if you just Google for it. It's like 153 pages. It's very good.
It's really too bad that like the Super Mario World and Zelda ones, at least in the United States, got collected and re-released in like modern hardcover collections with very, very good recreations of the pages. I'm sad that this one, among others of the Nintendo Power comics, hasn't gotten that treatment yet.
I loved this comic when it was running in Nintendo Power. I read them over and over and over again. You were talking earlier about Star Fox 64 treating the lore with deadly seriousness, and this comic does much the same. Fox is a much more hardcore figure in this one, very angry over the death of his father. There's a whole panel, if I recall correctly, where he's finally getting his revenge on Andross, and he's so mad about it. But like the art was fun. Space action was a lot of fun. They really leaned into the concepts of the Fox team being mercenaries rather than just always working for the Cornerian army and that kind of thing. And of course, they had Farrah Phoenix, who was the original Crystal, and she was a little puppy.
That's right.
And, oh no, she was a Fennec Fox. That's who she was. Yes.
That's right. That's right. I remember her. This was created by the same guy who drew the Super Metroid manga in Nintendo Power. Also very good. Benimaru Ito. He's done a ton at Nintendo. He briefly joined Creatures, Inc. and then jumped to HAL in the early aughts. And he is currently an advisor mostly on Kirby games.
Oh, cool.
So he's a big Kirby guy for like the past 20 years now.
No, I wish I'd... I read the Zelda one and I read the Mario one. I missed this one when it was new. I'm sad to say. I'd probably be even more of a Star Fox fan because I read... I would have read it then. Like, and I didn't know that... It was, you know, manga style Japanese in origin, but definitely I can say with the Mario and Zelda ones, when I read those and then read the Valiant comics that were made in America, I did have the reaction like, oh, this sucks. This Valiant one sucks. Like, I don't know why this one like looks uglier and is less funny.
Yeah,
to me.
Never liked the Valiant ones. My response was, I should like this. It's based on a Nintendo thing.
It stars a boy with his Game Boy, just like me. Yeah.
Any other thoughts on the comic? It's very good. Somebody has just posted it all on Tumblr. Hey, print it out yourself. Make your own book. No one's going to sue you. Moving on to the final, not the final, but close to the final entry. There was going to be a TV show, maybe. What the hell? What's going on here? Well, in 2011, remember when there were all of these sites like College Humor and Machinima and Funny or Die and Jash and all the rest? They were all making these videos in the early aughts, and one of them, made by College Humor, was the fantastic Star Fox, or Mr. Star Fox, but it was basically making a Wes Anderson-style trailer using a lot of the dialogue from 64. It's very cute. It's still online. And it was based on this that a potential Star Fox series could have happened. So thanks to Adam Conover of Adam's Ruins Everything, and I think Adam is a patron, because when I log into the Discord, I see him and his avatar as a patron of Retronauts. If that's not you, Adam, someone is faking your identity.
Adam should ruin that guy who's pretending to be him.
But I think it's him. So hello, Adam Conover. So based on, he was a College Humor employee, and we know based on his statements that in 2015, College Humor was in talks with Shigeru Miyamoto to develop a Star Fox animated series that would look like the stop-motion short they made. There were meetings that happened. Seemingly, this probably would have launched in tandem with Zero. But Adam says that when Netflix leaked that they were making a Zelda series, Nintendo pulled the plug on all adaptations. They got really cold feet, and that is why this never came into being. But you know, there was never any pre-production. There weren't any scripts written. As far as I know, there were just Miyamoto went to L.A. to meet with College Humor to have these meetings. And that's
L.A.
what,
Miyamoto, Hollywood Miyamoto.
Yes. Maybe he swung by Illumination on his way back. I don't know.
No, that's well, I mean, I could see it even just as, you know, College Humor. They did advertorial, like that was a huge part of their income. So I could totally see them just being hired, you know. Nintendo could approach it the same way they did with for Kid Icarus Uprising, hiring the Japanese animation studios to make stuff to promote that game. College Humor could be hired to make promotional things for Star Fox Zero.
And yeah, what came of it was nothing, but there was a short made to launch with Star Fox Zero called The Battle Begins. It's an officially sanctioned 15-minute anime short, like CGI anime, made by like a very notable studio. So Studio Wit. They made Attack on Titan, and recently they made a Ranking of Kings and Spy Family. Like, everybody likes what they make, and this is just a fun CGI short with the characters. It shows the potential. It feels like a pitch reel for what could be a Star Fox anime that just never came into being. I don't know if anyone has seen it but me. It's on YouTube, posted by Nintendo. It's very easy to watch, but I was like, this is kind of cool. I wish they had pursued this more, or done anything with Star Fox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watched it when it started. I mean, even if it was a successful thing and Wit maybe would have wanted to stick with it, like Star Fox Zero sold so poorly that there was no way they were going to, a company would invest in it as a full animated series, I would think, but not in 2016 or 17.
No. Yeah. Has anyone else seen this or any comments on this potential College Humor series?
I'm getting no's. I would have thought that College Humor series could have been at least another good chuckle. I'd be like, yeah, well, yeah.
And, hey, well, more time has passed.
That's how far Star Fox fell. Is that Nintendo was like, sure, College Humor, do it. We'll do it. Do whatever you want with it. We don't care.
Make some fun shorts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the story of a TV show, a potential TV show. And who knows what could have happened. Never would there ever be a Star Fox anime. We came close. There's 15 minutes of it online you can look at.
Hey, if that Illumination movie does great, in 10 years from now, we could be a decade deep into the Nintendo Cinematic Universe and Illumination's making a Star Fox movie.
Now that I would care about. Marvel, your time is up.
Yeah.
Moving on to the last entry, a surprising entry on this list, Starlink. Hey, guys, ever play Starlink?
Yes.
No, I haven't gone crazy. It's real.
It's based on a toy, right?
Yes. This was a very, very late entry in the Toys to Life genre. That its time had come in the mid-teens, I think. And this was a surprising launch. Ubisoft getting behind Toys to Life when everyone had moved their Toys to Life into the Toys to Death graveyard. Like, they were going into garages, they were going under beds, they were going into dumpsters. We didn't want this crap in our houses anymore. But Ubisoft felt strongly about this game, and the Nintendo Switch version of Starlink Battle for Atlas includes Star Fox content. And I was curious, I'm like, I bet if I go onto the Switch eShop, it'll be like $60. No, it was $11, and you get all the content. So I was like, okay, I gotta try this. It's a new Star Fox game, kind of, in 2018. What's going on here? And I'm surprised to report that's actually, it's very good.
Yeah, yeah.
It is an Ubisoft, you go overworld map icon dungeon where it's like, fly to this, pick up that, go do here, go over here, yeah. Talk to this guy. Because Ubisoft can only make one kind of game.
But that's what the machine is built to do. Their yes. factory can only pump out one type of thing.
The computer made this kind of a game, but it has flying, and it is very faithful to Star Fox and the characters, and it has all the voice actors. The Star Fox content is like 3 or 4 hours, but I am having a really good time with Starlink.
Yes, yeah.
I am shocked.
I also bought it for like the very cheap amount of money because they fucked up so hard thinking that people wanted a Toys to Life at that point. But yeah, their plan, here I am mocking their business strategy when their business strategy of, if we get Star Fox in this game and Nintendo dork will buy it, it did work. They were correct. I did buy it.
It worked on me.
But not at full price. That's the same kind of math that also leads to Mario plus Rabbids, because it lets you know, oh, who's the publisher who gets to make the calls on the sale prices for this? Ubisoft, because it's actually the price a 4-year-old game should be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And to me, I don't know the story behind this game. I know it was always a Toys to Life thing. To me, this feels like secretly somebody at Ubisoft wanting to make a Star Fox game, because every character is bland as hell. Like, when you look at the...
Because they're Ubisoft lead characters.
Yes.
That's why they're bland as hell.
Yeah. They're slightly hip. They've all got fun hair. But if you look at the Starlink cover art for the Switch version, it's like all of the profile faces of the main characters of Starlink and then the profile of Fox. And it underlines my theory from the first episode. This is why animal characters are more interesting. This is on display. This fox head is so much more interesting to look at than like all of the bland like AAA game characters that you have to choose from.
With all their spiky hair and 5 o'clock shadows.
And safe piercings.
Oh, yes.
That your mom won't turn an eye up at. So.
Yeah, it's so much fun when Star Fox shows up and actually talks with the other characters in that game. I that was another of my... pandemic purchases to finally play that game. And yeah, it was, but once I did only play like 5 hours of it, but it was all nice. I was like, man, finally a fucking space game where I'm just flying around shooting stuff. Like this is good. But yes, you're right. It also has Ubisoft map. Mm-hmm. It suffers from
Ubisoft map syndrome. UMS.
I feel like a bad Star Fox fan, because obviously I was very interested when it was announced, but I'll admit, I saw the little Star Wing, R-Wing toy, and I was like, this looks kind of plasticky and lame. And I didn't really want to spend the time and effort to acquire Starlink Battle for Atlas and actually play the thing, even though people were like, no, actually, the Star Fox content is pretty good. And now I'm kind of sad, because listening to you describe it, I'm like, oh, but I actually kind of want to do play it. Too bad.
You don't need any plastic to play it. Digital version has everything you need, and it, for me at the time, it was $11, and I was like, should I get this? And then I remembered that same morning I spent $7 on a nice coffee, and I was like, if I can spend $7 on coffee, I can buy this game for $11. It's fine.
Who would have thought that the French and Nintendo working together, that would end up with one of the best Star Fox games in a long, long time?
It's kind of ironic, because the British kicked off Star Fox and the French have ended it, and they're bitter enemies in real life. Hey, they're like dogs and monkeys.
Yeah. I can buy it now. Cool. I thought it was just on the
Wii. You can buy it now.
Buy it right now.
Dude, I'm going to buy it.
No, no. It was a Switch. Yeah. No, it's, yeah, that's, well, though, when I say the French, it's like, if you ever beat a Ubisoft game and watch the trailer, as I have, you watch the end, it's like, it's made by like 700 global studios in every... The sun never sets on Ubisoft game studios.
No. Yeah. Technically, I think this one's made by Toronto, but there's got to be French people there. Some person named Yves is probably in the credits.
A Frenchman's calling the shots there, yeah. That's for sure.
But yeah, that was like I said, Starlink was a surprise of the show for me. So was Star Fox Zero, but I think Starlink is way more playable than Star Fox Zero. But when you get to the end of Star Fox content, stop playing. It's not going to be that much fun with these boring humans. More furries, I say. I'm a 25% furry as we end this podcast. To wrap up, just really quick around the horn here. I want to know where you think the future of Star Fox is going. As for me, you've heard my thoughts. I feel like when Nintendo gets into VR, it's inevitable. I feel like Star Fox will be resurrected as a VR game. And after playing the Wii U version and controlling the cockpit with my Wii U gamepad, it feels natural and will feel even better with better technology. That's what I'm saying here. And I guess other final thoughts are give some of these games a chance. They have a really bad reputation. Some of them are slightly deserved, but I think there's something fun to find in all of them if you like Star Fox. Kat, we'll start with you. Any final thoughts on where you want the series to go?
Oh, I'm so sad by how Nintendo treats Star Fox. They just treat it as a gimmick or something that they can experiment around with. And I guess I've just kind of accepted that that's how it's going to be from now on. I kind of wish that they would release a proper Star Fox rail shooter just on the eShop. I think that it would be a really good downloadable game, but I think Nintendo just has it in their head that no, a rail shooter, a pure rail shooter would never work. It would never sell, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe they're right. Maybe that's the case. I've said already that my dream Star Fox game is pretty much an action RPG where you're going around on the planets, you're flying around, both foot action and then flying around action. Think Starfield, but with foxes. That would be kind of cool. Sadly, it's never going to happen. Alas.
Yes, and by the way, Starlink is not Starfield. Do not get them confused. One does not exist yet.
Starfield!
Starfield's at it again, folks. Diamond, how about you? What do you think is the future for Star Fox, or what would you like to see?
Well, first of all, I wanted to shout this out during the last episode, and I forgot, so now I'm making good in part two. There is an indie game right now on Steam in early access called X-Zodiac. That's E-X-Zodiac. And I don't know how many people are making this game, but I know it's extremely 90s Star Fox in look and feel. You know, you get little characters appearing on the screen. It's much more colorful. Of course, this frame rate is much better. But if you played Star Fox a long time ago and you want more Star Fox, I really think you should check this game out. Last I saw it was like maybe $10 because it's early access, but keep an eye on it. If you don't buy early access, I understand. But if you try it and you like it, I would say maybe jump in on it. I know I happened to play it at Bit Summit in Kyoto, which I felt was appropriate because, you know, right there near Nintendo. But it was very hard for me, but I was really impressed by how much they nailed sort of that look of the 90s game, which I really appreciated. As far as what happened to Star Fox now, I think Kat kind of said it. You know, if they share the same universe and Nintendo doesn't really care about either one, then mash up F-Zero and Star Fox together. You know, maybe two tastes will taste great together. I don't know. Or maybe take what Henry said. You know, if Splatoon is the new hotness, then put Splatoon on top of it. You know, maybe make us, you know, put Splatoon in the R-Wing. You know, they got to do something. You know, mix them up. I mean, there's no champions. There's no one at the rudder. So mix, you know, keep experimenting then until you find someone or something that works, because right now it's in limbo and I hate that.
And Henry, what about you? Future of Star Fox?
Yeah, you know, maybe it's just recency that we were just like, I played Starlink and hadn't really thought about it since playing it. And I'm like, you know what? Just their friendship with Ubisoft only increases. They just put out the second Rabbids and Mario game. Like, just hand it to Ubisoft. Give it. Let them just make a proper Star Fox. But I don't feel like that's what Ubisoft's into. I think they're up for a crossover that lifts up both of their things, but Ubisoft isn't going to just fully make a game they don't own.
Yeah.
Just make a full Star Fox. So, you know, I guess really I hope that they find another Japanese third party, because that seems to be the only people they really trust with making one of their games and that they want to work with. You know, Capcom hasn't given it a shot yet. How about Capcom? They're one of the big three.
They're too busy being insanely successful.
Yeah, they
at
don't
everything
really
they
need
do.
It. Yeah, they're not desperate. Namco, it'd probably just bounce back to Namco again because they're still pretty friendly with Namco. Though, yeah, Bob, if Miyamoto behind the scenes is working on some sort of VR thing for the next thing that follows Switch, maybe they'll figure it out finally on that.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I was thinking when I was playing Starlink, this sounds crazy, but I could play this as a Star Fox game.
You know, Bob, you mentioned VR. I know that they have those big, Namco has those big, like, VR-style pod arcade things here in Japan. If they finally made a Star Fox arcade game and put it in that sort of pod, maybe that'll take off, because like you literally step in this giant thing and the screen is bigger than you are. It's pretty intense. I actually, because I can't really do VR, I absolutely could not play that game. I had to leave the pod. It made me sick. But I think for people who are into that, I think that could be a thing.
That does sound fun.
I would move to Japan and you would never get me out of that pod. I would just live in it.
fully immersive Star Fox experience. You could ride the R-Wing. You could date Crystal. You could marry Slippy's wife. All the fun activities in the game. We're going to wrap up, though. Thanks for listening to Retronauts, everybody. Again, this is a listener-supported show. We're also part of the HyperX Podcast Network. If you want to support the show and get all these episodes 1 week at a time and ad-free, please go to patreon.com/retronauts. Sign up for $3 a month, and you'll get just that. But you want to sign up for the $5 level, friend, because if you do, you'll get all the advanced episodes and also all the episodes that have been behind the $5 paywall. We've been doing those since the beginning of 2020, which means there's close to 70, I think, at this point, if my math is correct. You get access to all of those, access to the first Star Fox retrospective, and also access to all of the wonderful articles and podcasts Diamond here has made for us, dozens of those as well, on top of all the exclusive podcasts and exclusive access. That's all happening at the $5 paywall at patreon.com/retronauts, and you also get Discord access as well, which the Discord's very fun and I like checking in on it. But
the Discord was a little upset about our Thunderbirds hate during our last episode, so sorry about that, Discord, but I maintain I'd never hate them. I just think their puppets are a little bit weird, and I don't understand why they're still popular in 21st century, but...
Yes, they're very creepy. I agree. There will never be a Thunderbirds episode. But again, it's at patreon.com/retronauts. Thank you very much. Kat, we know you're at IGN. What's going on with Kat Bailey and Axe of the Blood God?
Yeah, I host a podcast on a weekly basis. It's Axe of the Blood God with Nadia Oxford and Eric Van Allen. We talk about RPGs, and we also have a Patreon, patreon.com/bloodgodpod, where we have a ton of bonus episodes. Right now we are in the process of looking at Pokemon Black and White Gen 5 for our monthly Pantheon episode, and having a good time, just in time for the release of Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. Let's go check it out.
And Diamond, how about you?
Well, you mentioned the stuff I do for Retronauts, but I do write other places. In fact, the last time I saw Kat in person, we were at the Tokyo Game Show, and I was doing some work for IGN there. So that was a fun little time. But other than that, you can find me on Twitter and Twitch as Fight Club, F-E-I-T, that's my last name, C-L-U-B, it's a word you all know. And yeah, thank you for inviting me back.
No problem. And Henry, I know we've appeared on a podcast at least once.
Once or twice, yeah.
Together.
So me and Bob also do the Talking Simpsons Network of Podcasts, where we go through The Simpsons one episode at a time on the main show Talking Simpsons. We are deep into season 3 and 13 concurrently. We're bouncing back and forth a whole decade. We have a good time talking about 1992 and a bad time talking about 2002. It's
the year of Star Fox Adventures?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's and also we do the What a Cartoon and What a Cartoon Movie podcast as well, where we go deep into an animated film or TV series. And we do a ton of bonus content as well. So that is on patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, where you can hear us talk about King of the Hill, Futurama, Mission Hill, and The Critic. And coming very soon, at the time you hear this, we're doing 8 more episodes of Blabbing About Batman, the animated series, that you are all going to love at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
That's it for this episode of Retronauts. We'll see you again next time for another new episode. Take care.